Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Monday, June 11th. And just like that is the NBA offseason. Right now the Warriors are champs and the Pistons still coachless. This is your boy Matt Shook, an AP writer out in Chicago covering the NBA, Pistons follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade. Today we're going to be looking back briefly at Friday night with the Dubs getting the NBA title for the third time in four seasons, and also catch up a little bit with the Pistons GT team and what they did over the weekend. Also getting familiar today a little bit with Dwayne Casey, as who knows, maybe by the time you listen to this on Monday or whenever you do listen to this episode, he will be the new coach of the Detroit Pistons. Seems to be the favorite in the clubhouse, obviously. So we're going to talk to Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors, our sister brother podcast, however you want to call it, about Casey's time in the North in the six and why that went down in flames this season after a successful run in Toronto. And also for Pistons playoff playback, we're going to go back to 1990 and talk about a great effort under tough personal circumstances by one of the greatest Pistons of all time in the finals during the back-to-back season. But first, the Warriors winning a sweep on Friday, 108-85, 37 points from Steph Curry, 20-10 from Kevin Durant. LeBron, 23-7-8, pretty uninspiring effort in what could be his final game as a member of the Cleveland Cavaliers. The LeBron journey and drama continues and will continue to play out this summer. The finals thing, just a kind of a thought I had this weekend. The NBA Twitter, they just did love their characters. Obviously, in 2016, you had J.R. Smith shirtless after the parade. Everyone's talking about JaVale McGee getting his second ring. And now this year, it's all about Nick Young as he joined the Warriors this season. And I don't think the Nick Young memes and the videos that he's posting, I just don't think it's nearly as funny as most people out there think. And actually, I don't think they're funny at all. But that's just me being an old guy. And I know if you listen to this podcast, you're probably tired of my old guy complaints. But that's my old guy complaint about this week, is everything about Nick Young isn't really as funny as you think. And him strutting at half court, it's kind of fine, and I don't have a problem with it, but it's just like those things aren't as funny as some of you guys out there think they are to me. So that's my complaint. Had to get my get-off-my-lawn moment out of the way real quick. Another get-off-my-lawn moment, I thought Curry was the MVP of the finals, but again, I'm a noted Kevin Durant hater, so there is that. The disclaimer on that is it's pretty hard to argue for Curry for MVP when he was just so horrendous in Game 3, and obviously Kevin Durant was so great in Game 3, and that was obviously the pivotal game that turned it from everyone saying that maybe this goes five, possibly six, if you're being generous to the Cavaliers. I was one of those that said five. But that when you smash them in that game three, or not smash, but when you beat them down the stretch in that game three, Kevin Durant's the one hitting the big shots. Steph Curry can't hit anything until late. Kind of the clincher, and probably gave KD the finals MVP there. So I don't have a big issue with that, obviously, there. So Kevin Durant, a two-time finals MVP now. So throw him into the discussion for greatest finals performers or whatever you want to do with your legacy discussions here. Now, like I said, it's officially LeBron speculation season now. My guess is he comes back to Cleveland for 1 year, and not because, you know, he's patched things up with Dan Gilbert, the owner, or anything like that. Obviously, that's not the case. But it's just the options out there, nothing seems great right now. I feel like they deal Kevin Love, trade the 9 pick, and give it one more go as a franchise, see how things shake out next season for LeBron James and the landscape around the league. You got Philly, you got Houston out there. The Lakers are obviously looming all the time with LeBron. Just enough reasons to not go to one of those teams where it's not quite a perfect scenario, with the Lakers not really having quite enough assets, unless they make over that whole thing, trade some of those young guys and get a Kawhi or a Paul George in there somehow. But if you think if you're going to leave Cleveland for the second time and make such a big move to get away from your home for the second time, and I know that everyone's a lot more prepared for it, especially in Northeast Ohio, than they were back in 2010, but it better be a really good reason to leave, you know, after all those things he said in 2014 about coming back. I guess I guess it'd be 2015 that he came back, but or no, 2014, I was right. So it better be a really good reason, and I just don't see that good reason out there. If you go to Houston and join them, you're kind of a mercenary, and you're not getting enough credit for that ultimately, which is what he's looking for with his legacy. Maybe the same thing in some cases for Philadelphia as well. I'm still not 100% sold on Philadelphia's long-term status as an elite NBA team. Maybe I'm the only one out there who still has those question marks out there, especially with Joel Embiid's health. But also, I think they're just a ways away still. I think I kind of proved that out in the postseason, although they were the hot team for the first couple weeks in the postseason, and I was guilty of jumping on the bandwagon a little bit, saying that they were going to win the East after the round one win. But they ended up kind of getting smashed by Boston there, who got beat by Cleveland, who got smashed by Golden State. So all they did was beat a Miami team that was, in Pistons territory of the standings for most of the season. So how close is Philadelphia? I don't know. It's debatable. Obviously, LeBron changes the calculation on that if he goes there. But there are questions there that maybe aren't as safe of an option that LeBron might want as he's looking ahead for the next few years. Now, the draft coming up June 21st, obviously Locked On NBA. We've got a great mock draft coming out this week where all the teams are picking, having all this fun in the Slack channel with trade possibilities and making their picks and recording it. A draft analyst from Sports Illustrated is going to be all over it. David Locke, who runs the show, is going to be all over it as well. So I feel kind of left out of that. Been monitoring what kind of trades are out there as the de facto Pistons GM right now. Maybe I am the Pistons GM. Who knows? I'll keep my phone nearby if Tom Gores calls. But there's chances where you can take on Luol Deng's contract from the Lakers to get into the late first round with the Lakers pick. I can't do that. There's no space available for the Pistons to be able to pull that off. And I was on with Brian of the Blue Hardwood podcast of the Dallas Mavericks a little bit recently. Talked about Drummond for the number 5 pick. The problem with that is you have to take a big salary too to make it work with them salary wise. Wes Matthews is kind of the only one who fits that equation on Dallas, and now you're kind of taking away a little bit of the reset button nature of making that move. So I'm not as crazy about that kind of deal then, especially when Drummond's value is a little bit he's undervalued out there in the landscape, and I think the Pistons may be better off to see what they have in him, especially with Blake Griffin on the front line right now. The good news is that with Matthews' deal, if you were to think about something like that this is the last year for him, but you're just kind of throwing the towel in on this year with the Pistons without seeing how that works. I think that's what we're looking at. I mean, we've said it all along. Griffin, Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond, I don't foresee that big move coming. I don't see the value of those guys around the league being as bigger than it could potentially be for the Pistons this coming season. I know it's not super exciting to think about those three together, but it's something, and we'll see how it goes this season. I think it's just asking a lot for Pistons fans to do even a mini rebuild from that right now. But that being said already, the 2019 NBA championship odds have already been posted by some of the sites out in Vegas. Westgate had the Pistons with the 300-1 odds, tied with Charlotte, Brooklyn, Sacramento, Chicago, and Dallas towards the bottom of the list, but even further below the Pistons there. At 500-1 was Orlando and Memphis, and then at 1,000-1 was the Atlanta Hawks. I kind of see that Atlanta one being the clear, worst in that scenario. These are all long shots, obviously, that we're talking about, so we're kind of splitting hairs a little bit. Bovada has their site, their numbers out, has Detroit and all of those other teams that I just mentioned. When you talk about Charlotte, Brooklyn, Sacramento, Chicago, Dallas, Orlando, Memphis, and Atlanta, and Detroit, throw all those teams together, and they're all at 500-1, so a little bit longer odds for the Pistons there. I would say I was mostly surprised in that group with Memphis being there. When you add the fourth pick in the draft this year and Mike Conley coming back from injury, they could be back into the bottom of the Western Conference playoff mix. And then I would argue that Detroit is maybe the second team that doesn't belong in that group of losers, but not that Detroit belongs, anything better than 150-1 or anything like that. But hey, if you want to throw some bucks down, I do that. Anytime, it used to be whenever I had a friend that was going to Vegas, and now you can do this online, so it's not as cool. But hey, if you're going to Vegas before the NBA season starts, throw something down on the Pistons. Of course, in the mid-2000s, the first decade of the 2000s, that was a little bit better and more fun of a pick than it is now with the long shot. Now I kind of say, just pick the Pistons to win the East as a long shot there, and maybe we can win some money from a miraculous run that has not happened, by the way, in case you've been paying attention to the Pistons for the last 10 years. But again, anyways, check that out on Locked On NBA this week with that draft. It was a very popular episode last year, And the guys are doing a good job with that. As the Locked On Podcast Network, the local experts on the biggest stories. And another big story for the Pistons, Pistons GT. This weekend they played in the Turn Tournament, $150,000 up for grabs, with half of that going to the winning team. And that was the Blazers. By the way, the Pistons GT was the 4 seed. The team seems like they're kind of a toss-up each week. They can beat anyone and lose to anyone, but they were the 4 seed, lost to the Warriors Gaming Squad, which is the 13 seed in the first round. 56-51 was the final there. The Blazers, as I said, came in as the 1 seed, undefeated coming in, and they were undefeated on the weekend, winning the tournament. And it seems like the cool new age kind of thing that Portland should be good at, a nice that fan base has a nice team to root for there. But we're going to be talking to Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors about Dwayne Casey coming up next, as we got to get familiar with him, as he could be the coach of the Pistons by the end of the day. Hopefully there's a coach there by the end of the week, and maybe even a GM in front office while we're talking about it. It's frustrating, and we've got into that, obviously, here on this podcast many times. But if your company wants to reach men between the ages of 18 and 44, you should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if that demo sounds good to you, this is your spot. Plus, we've got reasonable rates. So email me at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
And now we're being joined by Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors. Sean, well, you know Locked On Raptors. It's just like Locked On Pistons, and they're talking about the Raptors every day. Sean's on Twitter at Woodley Sean, W-O-O-D-L-E-Y, Sean, S-E-A-N. Sean, thanks for taking the time today.
Yeah, no problem, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
We're the only two NBA teams out there right now without a head coach, and you guys know a lot about our search. Dwayne Casey's out there as the number one name. He was just let go as the Raptors head coach after a successful season up in Toronto this year, and then another second-round exit from the playoffs. What's the if Pistons fans want to get excited about Dwayne Casey coming in as a likely or possible coach candidate, what are some of the reasons to be positive about Dwayne Casey before we maybe go into the negatives a little bit?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of reasons to be excited about Dwayne Casey. He, you know, while it might have been time in Toronto, and I still kind of go back and forth on it, and I still, you know, I miss the idea of having Dwayne Casey being the Raptors head coach, because first and foremost, he's just like a wonderful guy. He's very easy to deal with for the media. He's a really easy guy to talk to, and just treats everyone super well and just like a really affable guy. He's got all these weird sayings that he always busts out in press conferences. If he becomes the Pistons head coach, you'll quickly learn that there's many different ways to skin a cat or skin an apple, or I don't know, all these different weird things that he pulls out. Hard to pull them off the top of my head right now, but just as a guy, he's very likable and decent. And you know, I think a lot of people were just kind of bummed at the idea of him not being around, just because he was an easy guy to deal with on a day-to-day basis. More from a sort of technical standpoint and sort of what he does as a coach, he is a really, really great big picture coach. He, you know, starting when he got here, I mean, the Raptors were kind of directionless. They had nothing. They were just like a weird mishmash of players that Brian Colangelo had acquired sort of and couldn't really it was a misshapen roster with very few fitting pieces or things that you wanted to have on the team. Kyle Lowry was still just kind of in the wind and not really a good player just yet. DeMar DeRozan hadn't really developed. And then Dwayne Casey comes around and he, like, at the very least, even if they weren't very good his first couple seasons, he established like a baseline of like how they were going to work every season. They were going to play defense, and their defensive rating, I think, improved every year for the first 5 seasons he was here. They just finished with, I think, the 4th best defense in the league this past season. So that's a thing that I think Dwayne Casey really brings, is he'll instill habits in, whether it's young players or established players, he'll instill habits pretty quickly and sort of make sure there's a thing. There's the way things are done is very consistent, I think. Over the course of a regular season, you know, he kind of got some criticism for this because he'd be so staunch with his rotations and wouldn't really change things up on the fly. And that became a problem in the playoffs because, like, he hadn't really tested stuff out, maybe to the extent that you'd like. But in the regular season, he has set rotations and he sticks with guys that he likes and he sticks with lineups he likes. And, you know, you saw this season how that worked for the Raptors. I mean, he rolled with that second unit so much and so consistently in certain parts of games, and it ended up being one of the best benches in the league, if not the best. It helped rest Kyle and DeMar, and just the way that he sort of, you know, structures his rotations over the course of a full season, it really sort of breeds guys know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly what the role is going to be, and they can you know, they can execute it without really worrying that they're going to lose their job because they have one or two bad games. Like, Dwayne is very consistent. We'll give guys lots of rope to sort of figure it out and get sort of onto a roll. And that's what happened with the Raptors this season, you know, and many seasons before. You know, maybe there's a bit of a struggle in the first couple of weeks, but they establish sort of a pattern of how they're going to play. And, you know, you get into the second month of the season and they usually go on a little winning streak and they start to hit their groove. And that was kind of the case this season to a greater extent than it has been in the past. So that's, I think, the biggest thing about Dwayne Casey that I can say is a good thing. He's just a really good big picture coach. You know, I think Zach Lowe put it really well in a piece that he wrote this season. He was just like maybe the best big picture tactician in the league. You can get to the minor stuff, and we probably will talk about this, just sort of the smaller level detail stuff that maybe that's where he struggles. But if you're a team that kind of like the Pistons has kind of been directionless for a little while and doesn't really seem to know what it wants to be, at least having a guy come in like Dwayne Casey who can sort of set a baseline and just sort of day in, day out kind of have – you just know what you're going to be doing as a team and what you're going to expect to see from the team as a fan. I think that's a pretty good thing to have. There was this thing, it was a joke early on because it was so lame and corny, but Dwayne Casey literally brought a boulder into the Raptors locker room in the first or second season he was with the Raptors. And he had this mantra that was pound the rock, pound the rock, pound the rock. And it was like, he repeated it over and over again. It was super lame, super weird, super corny. No one really knew what it meant. Essentially, it was just meant like, be consistent and do the same thing every day. And there are pictures of him standing next to this enormous, like 10-ton boulder in the middle of the Raptors locker room. And it's a joke now. It's just something we laugh and look back on. But that's kind of indicative of what his sort of style as a coach is. And I think especially for a young team and the Pistons, maybe they transition more to being young or around Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond. I'm not really sure what they're going to look like. I'm not sure they would know what they're going to look like. I think Dwayne would be a really good guy to have in to sort of set a course for the team and make sure they execute that course and stay on it for, you know, the course of an entire season.
Well, Sean, I don't know if you know it, but you just bummed me out really badly because, and a lot of that sounds great, but Pound the Rock, I was not familiar with that story. I did not know about that, but that sounds a lot to us Pistons fans or Pistons followers and probably Detroit Lions fans like Rod Marinelli. And he went 0-16 as a Lions coach. So now we're going to cross Dwayne Casey's name off our list. And hopefully he doesn't get hired as a Pistons coach. No, just kidding there. But moving on, as you kind of alluded to, obviously he was fired after the number one seed in the Eastern Conference this year. So obviously things weren't all rosy, and we know he wasn't hired by the current administration there in Toronto with Jeudry. What were some of the couple issues? Obviously, the playoff exit and maybe some of the lack of adjustments and ways to be flexibility with some of those rotations, maybe in the playoffs, kind of did him in there. Would you say that that's maybe the biggest reason? And is there a couple more that stand out to you as reasons to be leery of a hire for the Pistons there?
Yeah, there are a few things. I think a couple of the circumstances under which, you know, the firing happened, I think some of it was kind of out of his control, and it was more just sort of the direction of the team and how you could sell it as a PR thing to come back next season. Because, you know, getting beaten by LeBron 3 years in the playoffs in a row and getting swept 2 years in a row, that like knocks a lot of wind out of you and makes people pretty sad. It makes Raptors fans pretty angsty. And I think this was just kind of a move that had to be made because you look at the Raptors roster and they kind of got good ahead of time. They weren't really supposed to be as good as they were this season, and they kind of overshot expectations. And with that comes, you know, a moving of the goalposts. And when that happens, you know, there's going to be hell to pay if things don't really go to what the new expectations are that you sort of established for yourself over the course of a really successful season. And so you get to the end of the season, and the Raptors weren't really in a place where they could really pivot into a rebuild here. You know, Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan are on contracts for 2 and 3 more years. Same with Serge Ibaka. He's got 2 more years at $20 million a year. Like, you're not trading that deal and getting anything back. They have like these young guys that they can eventually maybe turn the keys over to, but maybe it's a little bit too soon. And at the same time, they're probably too good to be like a complete tank job next season because they have a lot of good young pieces in place. So it didn't really make sense to sort of blow it all up and just try to tank for a high pick next year because it might not be possible already. So just the way that the team is shaping up and just sort of how the contracts are sort of laid out and just sort of the pivot points for this team and sort of to try to you know, restart things. It just never really made sense this summer. So I don't think we're going to see many trades or moves of star players. And with that comes the need for some other move. And Dwayne Casey was just the easiest move to make. And like, there are reasons, you know, why it's a good decision as well, you know, independent of what happened in the playoffs and sort of what happened with this team and sort of where they're at. I mean, he was kind of on the hot seat for 4 or 5 years. And there were times, you know, each of the last 3 or 4 years, there were times where I kind of convinced myself that he was going to be fired. After they got swept by the Wizards, I was almost certain he was going to be fired, but he stuck around, survived that, had a great season the next year, went to the conference finals. And then after they lost to the Cavs last season, I was less sure, but then Masai Ujiri comes out in his postseason press conference and says they need a culture reset. And I thought for sure that meant, oh, Dwayne Casey's getting fired. Not what happened. Dwayne Casey oversaw the culture reset. We saw how successful they were in the regular season. And then, so I think at the end of this season, it was kind of the time, I think, just the way things played out and just sort of where they were at. They were kind of at the end of this rope, and there was not really a you know, more upside to tap, I think, with Dwayne Casey as the head coach of this team. And there still might not be. You know, they might just be victims of their talent and their lack thereof, I guess. But it just made sense. And, you know, in terms of things where Dwayne Casey might struggle, I think it's in-game stuff. I kind of alluded to that. It's like the tiny details inside a game that can kind of swing an individual game here and there. And that doesn't matter really that much in the course of a regular season, because they were good enough where they didn't really come down to crunch time all that often. And it wasn't, you know, a huge problem. And sort of the big picture, I think, is probably a better way to look at a regular season as opposed to sort of picking apart each game. But in the playoffs, that obviously changes. And every single game and every single, you know, situational, you know, decision you make is potentially going to dictate the outcome of a series. And especially against the Cavaliers, the game plans have never really been there. The in-game rotations and lineups have been a little sort of quirky at times. I mean, there was a time in the game 3 against the Cavs this year where 2 minutes left in the first half, he throws in Lucas Nogueira, who hadn't played in like a month, and he goes like minus 12 in 2 minutes, and that pretty much sewers the entire season for the Raptors, and they were never coming back in that game. And it's just, that's kind of the stuff that people kind of get upset about. It's the in-game lineup stuff. It's the, you know, being more of a reactive coach as opposed to being a proactive coach. Like a team will sort of go small, or they'll, you know, attack a matchup and it's going to take a few possessions or, you know, maybe a full quarter for Dwayne Casey to really sort of key in and say, all right, like, we got to change things up. I mean, against the Cavs, for example, again, like, it was game 2 against the Cavs. They had CJ Miles guarding Kevin Love for like 5 straight possessions, and Kevin Love scored on every single one of them. And it took a long time for Casey to be like, okay, we got to switch this up, change the lineups, get CJ Miles out of there. And you know, just, it never really felt like he had like a move where he could checkmate another team. And maybe that's, again, you know, it's tied to the roster. There's lots of blame to go around with the Raptors. It's not entirely Dwayne Casey by any means, but the way that he deployed his pieces wasn't always ideal. And I think that's probably, in the end, sort of the biggest criticism of him, and why I think the Raptors in their new head coach are going to be looking for someone who's more of an in-game tactician, who's more quick on the fly with decision-making, and maybe sort of forego some of the big picture stuff, because, you know, Dwayne Casey did such a great job of building up the sort of reputation of the team and the organization and making it so stable that I think they kind of feel like they're beyond having to have sort of a figurehead guy, and maybe they can go the more tactician route. And so if you're a Pistons fan, and you're worried about, you know, 3-4 years down the line, maybe when this team is, you know, potentially a deep playoff team, maybe that's where you worry about the Dwayne Casey thing. But I think the Pistons are far enough away from that where maybe that's not something that should be all that much of a concern right now.
Yeah, the culture shift would be a positive move for the Pistons in that direction. But as far as late game situations that that maybe Dwayne Casey struggled in, one that he did pretty good one in the maybe the most memorable Pistons game of the season this year was having DeMar DeRozan on the court, because it was a good move to do that, because he cruised down the entire the entire court and dunked all over Anthony Tolliver, who, to his credit, was kind of stepping up in the absence of Blake Griffin, moving over on the play there at Little Caesars Arena, where the Raptors got the overtime win against the Pistons shortly after the Blake Griffin trade. Kind of a big one, because the crowd troubles that the Pistons had and the attendance issues were helped by the fact that so many fans from Toronto came down that game. ESPN won a pretty memorable game as far as the Pistons go, and that'll tell you where the Pistons season was at. That was one game that we kind of hang our hat on as Toronto kind of coming in and punking us on ESPN there.
And that game too, I think, is kind of illustrative of, the job Dwayne Casey did this season. I mean, you think about former Raptors teams and how ISO heavy they were and how DeMar and Kyle dependent they were. And that game against the Pistons you're talking about, that game ended on a three-pointer from Fred VanVleet in the corner that DeMar set up. And sort of that's something you wouldn't really see before. But the way that Dwayne Casey just sort of on the fly said, all right, we're changing the way we play. We have to change the way we play. We're getting threes up. Like, it's just, it's non-negotiable. And we're, you know, we're sharing the ball. We're not going Kyle and DeMar heavy. That game was one of the few games this season, or one of many games this season, I should say, where the sort of full-scale change in the sort of how the Raptors played was put on display. And I think, you know, that is maybe an underrated thing about Dwayne Casey, is that he took a team that he had been with for 6 years, and, you know, Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, he had been with for that long as well, and said, all right, guys, like, you know, we have to change. And he got them to buy it. It was a little rocky at the start of the season. There were some quotes from Kyle and DeMar about how they weren't really getting used to the offense. They were feeling uncomfortable, whatever. But, you know, pretty quickly they started winning a bunch of games and they stopped saying things like that. And things were just sort of pretty hunky-dory all season long. And I think Dwayne Casey deserves a tremendous amount of credit for how the Raptors just absolutely overhauled the way they've played for, you know, half a decade over the course of one offseason. It was pretty impressive. So again, another sort of check mark in the Dwayne Casey pros aisle, I suppose.
Now, Sean, I want to ask you real quick about the Raptors head coaching situation. Just like the Pistons, it's and the Pistons, I don't know that we can definitively say that they're quote unquote certainly just down to two names at this point, but it sounds like the Raptors are kind of in that same boat too, where it's one coach who is debatably to the degree is maybe the debate, but like very much involved in the success of the Raptors for the past few years. And then another coaching candidate who's to some degree involved in the success of the Spurs for the past few years. And that's the exact same situation that the Pistons have now. Dwayne Casey and Ime Udoka are the names that the Pistons are looking at. Tell us a little bit about where the Raptors are at right now.
Yeah, kind of a similar spot. Nick Nurse, their lead offensive assistant, he was, again, one of the architects of the new offense this season as well. He seems to be a finalist, and from what it sounds like, he's probably the favorite. And then Ettore Messina from the Spurs. They also interviewed Ime Udoka, actually, and Sarutis Jasikevičius as well from Lithuania. Interviewed both of them, but it sounds like Messina and Nurse are the final two. And I'm kind of torn. I don't really know what to think about it. I think there's a lot to say for staying in house when you're a 59 win team, having a guy who the players know, who was responsible for the stuff that actually worked for the Raptors in the playoffs this season. I mean, you know, you can talk about how the Raptors, you know, lost to the Cavs and it was terrible this year, but their offense, which was always the problem before, and it never really translated to the playoffs, it totally did this season. I think they finished the playoffs with the second highest offensive rating of any team. So I think there's a lot to be said for having the institutional knowledge sort of stay in house with Nick Nurse. They already lost Jerry Stackhouse, who they also interviewed for the job. He went to Memphis as an assistant. So I think the more you can keep sort of the pipeline of coaches that the Raptors have really worked to develop over the last few years in house, I think that's probably a good thing. So I'm very okay if it's Nick Nurse. At the same time, it's hard to argue with the resume of Ettore Messina. And I like new ideas and I like new thinkers and I like people who maybe, you know, haven't gotten a shot for whatever reason. And I think, you know, most of it with Messina is probably that he was a European coach and now he's been with the Spurs, and maybe it's been a little hard for him to move on from that, because of course it would be. That's an awesome gig to be an assistant there. But yeah, I have a hard time evaluating coaches because we don't really know what they're going to be until we see them in action. And we don't know, will Messina be a good in-game tactician? Will he be a good big picture guy? Will he have relationships with the best players on the team? It's hard to find, you know, any sort of proof that that's going to be, or what's going to be the case with that. So for me, I think maybe there's more certainty in Nick Nurse just because he's been here. At the same time, if you're a Raptors fan who's been annoyed with how things have gone the last couple of seasons and want some big change, maybe Messina's your guy. Either way, I think, you know, the fact that the Raptors are going with someone who hasn't been an NBA head coach before, that's kind of something I like. I'd much prefer a new voice, a new sort of vision, as opposed to a retread. Nothing against Stan Van Gundy, but if the Raptors had been rumored to be talking to Stan Van Gundy, I'd be pretty upset right now, just because I don't think, you know, retreads for me are kind of a non-starter, especially when you're a team like the Raptors who just fired Dwayne Casey, who is a very good coach. And there's a very real chance that your next coach is not going to be better than him, but you have to give yourself a chance of sort of tapping into some upside on a guy, as opposed to going with someone that you might already know is a worse coach than Dwayne Casey. So Nurse or Messina seems like it's going to be the case. Nick Nurse, I guess, would be my pick, but who knows? It's coaches. We don't know anything about coaches. It's so hard to evaluate.
Yeah, especially the, like you mentioned, those Spurs assistants. And we know Messina has a great background, like you said, in Europe, and obviously the Popovich school of coaching there, and Udoka is in the same way. But we'll never know, or we may never know, but we don't certainly don't know for sure how these guys would do as head coaches in the NBA. But it could be worth something worth exploring, especially if Dwayne Casey says, you know what, I'm looking at this Pistons organization right now and the $6.5 million check that I'm getting from Toronto, and maybe I'll take a year off and see what develops next offseason, which is, I think, could be a possibility in these next couple of days as well. And the Pistons could find themselves with Udoka, or maybe even opening up the search a little bit more going forward. But Sean Woodley, thanks for taking the time today. Find him on Twitter at Woodley Sean, and I think there's Sean S-E-A-N, and I think these are two teams that could be, especially if Dwayne Casey gets hired here in Detroit, I think these are two teams that could be linked these next couple of years, maybe even a possible playoff opponent in the first round at some point if the Raptors stay near the top of the Eastern Conference and the Pistons are able to sneak in sometime these next couple of years as a 6, 7, or 8 seed. We could be making some trips up to the north and to check out the team there in the 6. So I enjoy Toronto. I enjoy the times I've spent there. I was there for the Pan Am games to cover them in 2015. Been up there for Blue Jays, and I've never actually been to a Raptors game. So maybe we'll look up Sean Woodley when we go up to Toronto, maybe sometime this season. But Sean, thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, man, for sure. Yeah, I've always wanted a Raptors-Pistons playoff series just so it's, like, easy to travel, and I could, like, I'm, like, a 3.5-hour drive from Detroit, so I would be all for that. That's a rivalry that has not really blossomed into something, but it probably should have. They've just never really been good at the same time. They had those playoff matchups early on, but that's about it. So, yeah, I'm on board for some Pistons-Raptors playoff basketball pretty soon. Let's see it.
Now time for Pistons playoff playback, going back to 1990 today. In the NBA Finals, the Pistons got the Game 1 win against Portland, but then dropped Game 2 as Isaiah Thomas misses at the regulation buzzer. Then Buddha Edwards misses the turnaround jumper, partially blocked at the overtime buzzer. He had 26 that game, 26 for Bill Laimbeer, including 6 three-pointers, with the big one coming 10 seconds left in overtime to give the Pistons the lead. But Clyde Drexler knocks down 2 free throws to get the overtime win, setting up Game 3 in Portland, becoming a huge one with a series tied at 1-1 with 3 games coming up in Portland. So possible that Detroit could get swept in Rip City and maybe not have a chance to come back to the Palace for Games 6 and 7 late in that series. But June 10th, 1990, 28 years ago, this was actually 28 years ago yesterday on Sunday, 121-106 final victory for the Pistons. Joe Dumars leads the way with 33 points there. Not a great series for him overall, as he was hampered with a groin injury, but this was the one game that he had a great one. And it turns out that his father, Joe Dumars Jr., Joe D is actually JD3, Joe Dumars the third, but Joe Dumars Jr., his father had been sick. He'd been in ICU for a few weeks before this. So between Joe Dumars, Chuck Daly, and Isaiah Thomas, Joe expressed his wishes during the playoffs to not be told that his father had maybe passed away until after a game, if it had happened on game day. So before that game, on a Sunday, Chuck gets the call from Debbie Dumars, Joe's wife. She talked to Isaiah before the game. It turns out that Joe Jr. passed away about 90 minutes before game time, and they didn't tell him. And Brendan Malone knew, Chuck Daly knew, Isaiah Thomas knew, but that was just about it. And in addition to Bill Davidson, some of the other Pistons personnel. And Zeke knew, and he had the famous quote after a floater late in the game. He gave Joe D the high five after that. That Joe D went really high, that shot did. And Isaiah said that he thought to himself at that time that your dad made that go in, and it was a nice moment, kind of a memorable quote from Isaiah Thomas at that time. Jody ended up flying to Louisiana after the game, spent some time with the family, but he did return 2 days later and dropped 26 in Game 4, a game that we'll talk about in a couple days here at Pistons Playoff Playback, a forgotten game and a forgotten finish to Game 4 that was an amazing play that went down, and we'll talk more about that in a couple days. But one thing I wanted to point out as I was watching some of the highlights from Game 3 to prepare for Pistons Playoff Playback today, a rookie that season on Portland, and I had forgotten about this, was Drazen Petrovic, who was traded early the next season. So that was his rookie year, and then traded early the next season to New Jersey, where he had the beginnings of a great career. And then obviously he died tragically in 1993 at age 28 in that car crash over in Europe. So another guy where what could have been with one of the great European players at that time, he was becoming an all-star, had 20 points for New Jersey per season in his second to last year, and then 22 per game the year after that as New Jersey and Kenny Anderson were starting to build something there. And obviously the tragic loss for the NBA community with Drazen Petrovic there as a rookie on the Portland Trailblazers, almost got his first ring or his only ring with the Trailblazers against the Pistons in 1990. A series that kind of gets forgotten and how close it was going down to the wire in pretty much every game except for games 1 and 3. Here, there. But let me know what you think about those memories, what you remember about those games. Give us a follow on Twitter at Matt_Schuch, S-C-H-O-C-H. Follow us on Locked On Pistons on Twitter as well. Give us a Facebook like at Locked On Pistons-Matt Schuch. Follow the action there and give us a rating and review on iTunes as well. This is your host, Matt Schuch, on Coach Watch for the rest of the season, for an office watch as well. We'll jump on if there's any news and I'm able to do that as quickly as possible this week here on Locked On Pistons. Thanks for listening, everyone.